that she had an exceptionally well-trained mind with extensive study in Buddhism, that she had completed 2 3-year retreats, was proficient in both oral and written Tibetan, had founded a Dharma center in New Hampshire, and was ordained as a Buddhist nun for 12 years. But my yes was perhaps more related to the teachers we share, Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, and my father, Tulku Orgen, among others. She describes how it felt to meet her teachers so beautifully. They don't just aspire to kindness, they radiate it. They have dissolved some of the barriers between head and heart, between the wish for goodness and goodness itself. Maybe my yes was because we share the experience and good fortune of meeting masters with this type of rare kindness that is so precious and important for our world. While in her second 3-year retreat, through her suffering and searching, she rediscovered the truth of her body like an old friend, a fertile and alive landscape of feeling. She began to cut through the culturally conditioned concepts she had of her body, allowing more direct, vital, and unfiltered experiences. She had moved from a more transcendent up to waking down. This book has a natural, almost familiar feel because it comes out of her lived experience and her ability to weave stories, poetry, striking images, and helpful insights into a lovely mandala for us to enter. At the same time, Lama Willa provides a clear path, a rich practice that Dharma students at all levels can use on a daily basis or retreat. In a very practical way, she leads us through what she calls layers of embodiment, the seamless interdependence of our bodies, energy body, and minds, so we can open to the mystery of our own lives. Sakni Rinpoche, author of How Mindfulness Works and Open Heart, Open Mind. Prologue. My mother used to tell a story of a time when I was 3 years old. We were walking across the campus of UC Berkeley, where my mother worked. At Sather Gate, we encountered a group of Hare Krishnas, with their long peach robes and shaved heads, dancing and singing. A Radanga drum and small cymbals kept time. As my mother told it, I broke away, and before she knew what was happening, her baby was in the middle of a throng of whirling dancers, hips swaying, hands waving, laughing. My mother was anxious, but amused. The devotees handed me a couple of tiny cymbals. This moment captures how I often felt in my body as a young child. Joyful, unself-conscious, spontaneous, and safe. As young children, we do not think much about the body. Instead, we feel the body as a landscape of sensations and responses. This landscape is enriched by safe and loving physical contact with our caregivers, contact with the natural world, joy in movement, and contact with animals. This landscape is scarred by unsafe physical contact, trauma, and experiences of fear and danger. Every human being carries a mixed feeling history from childhood encoded in the territory of the body. As we grow up, the landscape of feeling tends to fade into the background as the conceptual self solidifies. As adolescents and young adults, as we are exposed to cultural norms of appearance and embodiment, we begin to think a lot about the body. We compare our body to the norms of our culture and to other bodies. The landscape of feeling is gradually supplemented, or sometimes even replaced by a body formed by concepts, opinions, and ideas. Some of these concepts might be empowering, even bringing us back to the landscape of feeling. But it is not at all uncommon for our body concepts to be distorted. These concepts, more often than not, obscure the landscape of feeling. As a young adult, I experienced such a distortion and a disruption of it. During my first 2 years of college, all my ideas about the body proliferated to such an extent as to catalyze a kind of paralysis. Perhaps the extremity of this experience ended up being a kind of assist, because I could not ignore what had happened. At the time, I was attending a small liberal arts college in